The Doom of Gnasharak. Prowling the streets of Miragliano one day, in search of an elusive merchant who had a supply of Orion inks at a suspiciously low price, I found myself unexpectedly staring into the black steel face of Brunner's helmet. I was surprised at our sudden meeting. It had been some months since our last conversation. The bounty hunter nodded, relaxing the grip his hand had assumed on the hilt of his sword as he saw my own unarmed condition. I believe that the bounty hunter had a certain fondness for me, but I doubt he trusted anyone. I greeted Brunner warmly, happy indeed to have stumbled upon him, thoughts of stolen ink at once banished from my head. My initial recounting of the man's exploits had proven extremely popular. Indeed, I was still living off some of the proceeds the pamphlet had won me, and I was eager to repeat my past success. I wasted no time in unleashing a barrage of questions, asking him where he had gone these past months, what feats of bravery and avarice, though I kept that thought firmly to myself, he had accomplished. Brunner batted away my questions, saying that the street was no place for talk. He began to walk away, and as he did so, I noticed the stiff manner in which he moved, and the fact that some pieces of his armor appeared to be new, as though the old ones had required replacements. The thought occurred to me that perhaps his lengthy absence had not been due to some long and difficult string of hunts, but because this grim and forbidding man had actually encountered a foe that was his equal. Perhaps he had spent these long months recovering from injuries received in battle. Thrilled by the prospect of such a tale, I hurried after him, a feat made easy by the slowed nature of his stride. As I had half expected, Brunner's path led me to the Black Boar. I found the bounty hunter seated, as usual, at one of the rear tables, a tankard of beer set before him. I noticed a second tankard opposite him, and quietly chastised myself for being so foolish as to think that my contract had not seen me dogging his tracks. I took the unspoken invitation and seated myself at the table. I sipped at my beer a moment, noting the dents and scratches on his armor, and observing once more the stiff, awkward movements of his left arm as he lifted up the cup to his mouth. I inquired as to what mishap has discomfited Brunner so, not daring to suggest that he had fallen prey to injury or illness. The bounty hunter sipped at his beer for a moment, then set his tankard down, fixing me with his cold blue eyes. In a low voice that was kindred to the sound of a raven gliding toward a gallows, he asked me if I had ever hunted orcs. Smoke billowed from the blazing rubble, fingers of flame clutching at the darkening, overcast sky. Screams and sounds of slaughter rose into the darkness, as if to welcome the advent of night. Beside the inferno, that had moments before been a barn, a massive, brutish shape loomed, glaring at a burning building. The dancing flames picked out details of the figure. The shape belonged to no human body. The legs were short, bandy, almost bowed. The arms were long, much longer than a man's, more like the limbs of the fabled apes of the Southlands, and rippling with such a quantity of muscle that even the strongest men could not match. The shoulders were broad, nearly 4 feet in breadth. The head jutted forward from the shoulders, supported by a thick stump of a neck. Its skull was thick, the forehead sloping away so quickly from the creature's face as to be almost non-existent. Sharp, wolf-like ears adorned the sides of the head. One of them was notched, and sported dozens of steel and brass rings, blades of rusting metal dangling from each loop. The face of the beast was dominated by a massive maw, the lower jaw of the creature's mouth jutting forward, allowing its tusk-like fangs to stab past its upper lips and cheeks. Each of the tusks was tipped by a cap of steel pinned into the living ivory of the fangs. The tips of the two longest fangs rested against the edge of the deep-set eye sockets that sank into the creature's skull from either side of its small, smashed, snout-like nose. Beady red eyes glowered from the shadowed pits of the creature's face, offsetting the dark green hue of its leathery, weathered hide. The monster had come from the impenetrable depths of the mountains in the south, known as the Vaults, and wore the tale of his travels upon his grotesque body. Armor encased his form, armor ripped from the bodies of butchered foes. The shoulder plates that protected his upper arms had been beaten from the helmets of human knights. The chainmail hauberk that dripped about his chest and hung below his waist had once graced an ogre mercenary. The steel leggings had been cobbled together from the greaves of a dozen militiamen who had been unfortunate enough to discover the beings that had been preying upon their mountain village's cattle. The piecemeal armor was held together by numerous leather straps and bits of wire, and it creaked and groaned as the orc moved. But the blade, held in his ham-like fist, was no looted and violated craftwork of man. The work of his own people's brutish smiths. It was a massive, cleaver-like blade, its edge nearly 3.5 feet in length, owned to a dull sharpness that would punch through steel and bone without notching the blade. A thick, round stump of steel formed a crude handle for the orc's fist to grip at the bottom of the blade. A sideshow strongman would have been hard-pressed to even lift the mass of steel. The orc lifted it above its head in one hand without even a grunt of effort from his lungs. The cleaver was like the orc who wielded it, and whose people had crafted it, massive, monstrous, ugly, and murderous. The orc's mouth gaped open, exposing bits of rotting meat caught between the fangs. Its voice roared over the screams, over the crackle of the flames. It was like the boom of a cannon, and carried with it the grating harshness of a knife scraping bone. The slobbering, brutal tones sounded like shredding metal. The monster was howling to his minions in the harsh orc tongue. The orcs had fallen upon the village, like one of the Grey Mountains' capricious storms, suddenly, without warning, and utterly devastating. The villagers, peasant farmers, and a few craftsmen had fallen before the orcs, like wheat before the scythe, and the greenskin marauders had reaped the harvest in a frenzy of murder and butchery. The terrified Bretonians had mounted no form of defense. They had run before the orcs, fleeing for their lives, rather than stand to fight. The sight of their human adversaries fleeing had driven the raiders into an even more berserk rage. They had come for loot and slaughter, it was true, but above all else, they had come for battle. Now, with the entire hamlet in flames, the last survivors cowered within the quickly burning barn. Gnasherak turned his attention toward the barn as the wooden door opened. A coughing man emerged, thick black smoke billowing from behind him. Several soot-stained, sobbing faces appeared in the doorway behind him, gasping for fresh air. Gnasherak's beady red eyes studied the man. He was a burly sort of human, most likely the protector of this nest of cattle. A simple leather contrivance hung about his neck and was tied to his knees. The man held a large hammer in his hands, but one look told Gnasherak that it was a tool, not a weapon. The orc's gruesome face twisted, as though he had eaten something distasteful. He spat a blob of phlegm as if to remove a foulness from his mouth. Still, the war boss hefted a huge blade and shambled forward. Gnasherak growled at the leather-aproned human. The man hesitated, glancing back at the burning barn. Then he walked forward. He shifted his grip on the hammer, his knuckles turning white, as he firmed his grasp. The man spread his legs apart, adopting a combat stance. It had been long years since he had raised a weapon against bandit raiders, but the blacksmith was no coward. He fought down the fear in his breast, staring at a mob of green-skinned monsters with his best defiant glare. Gnasherak and his followers laughed at this pathetic sight. The blacksmith rushed at them, hate overcoming his fear, as their grunting leader washed over him. Nasharak's lips twisted in the parody of a smile. The orc war boss loped forward, the brutal length of his cleaver held straight up beside him. Thick lines of foamy spittle trickled from the corners of the fiend's mouth as he anticipated the coming fray. The blacksmith was the first man in the entire village to turn and fight him, and Nasharak intended to savor the moment.
"Orcs, come!"
the man screamed in a voice filled more with terror than rage. He leapt forward, bringing the hammer down in a smashing blow. The orc leader stepped back, turning his body and letting the clumsy blow strike the armor of his shoulder guard. Nasharak glared at the man. The orc's jaws dropped to their full cavernous extent, and a deep, rumbling roar issued from its bellow-like lungs. The blacksmith cringed, holding the hammer across his chest, as though to make a barrier between himself and the greenskin marauder. Nasharak lifted his massive blade and brought the weapon crashing down. The crude cleaver snapped the steel hammer like a twig and sliced into the flesh of the man cowering behind the crude weapon, crunching through the ribcage and severing him crosswise from shoulder to waist. Blood exploded from the wound that slid apart, the dismembered halves slipping into the dirt. The faces at the doorway of the burning barn wailed in horror. Gnasharak paused to hawk a glob of phlegm at the dead body. He turned and roared at his followers. The orcs rushed forward, not using their weapons to kill, but to herd the survivors back into the burning barn. Gnasharak watched his mob for a moment, then craned his bull neck about, casting a last, disgusted look at the mutilated blacksmith. He turned his eyes from the body towards the orcs herding the cowering survivors back into the blazing barn with the points of their spears. The screams brought a slight smile to Nasharak's face, but it was not enough. As the clouds at last released the slightest of drizzles, the orc nodded to himself. Somewhere to the north, he would find the knights who owned the sorry cattle he and his mob had claimed. Then there would be a slaughter worthy of an orc, a proper fight to make the name of Nasharak headcrusher. The peasants thought the harvest was past, but the orc would teach them and their masters differently. There was a second harvest coming, a harvest reaped not with sickles but with swords. Opening his massive maw once more, Nasharak voiced his bestial howl of ambition into the falling night. The castle of the Marquis de Galfour loomed over the flat meadowlands. Tall towers thrust upwards from every corner of the curtain wall, while still taller pillars of stone rose from the keep. From the height of the tallest tower, the Marquis could look down upon his entire domain, even to the distant green apparition on the horizon that marked the easternmost limit of his realm, the edge of the fairy-haunted wood of Lauren. He could see every farm, every village, every little hovel the peasants of his lands called home. It was a sight the aged Marquis never tired of, looking down upon his land, his possessions, knowing that they were his by decree of Bretonia's king and the grace of the lady, Bretonia's patron deity. He would drink in the blue of the sky, the gold of the fields, the green of the meadows, long into the afternoon. Then the sun would begin its downward descent, and the Marquis would return to his chambers within the castle and attend to such duties as were necessary to manage his domain that could not be delegated to his father or his steward. But this morning the view had been spoiled, befouled by a thick stream of black smoke rising from the south, in the direction of the distant mountains. This was where a few hamlets stood, dwellings for the rugged peasant miners who clawed salt from the slopes of the vaults and helped the Galfort's domain prosper. Later in the day, the wasted, worn-out form of a peasant was brought to the castle, discovered by one of the Galfort's game wardens wandering through the forest. Yet this sorry, terrified creature was no poacher, and the tale he told the Marquis turned his blood to ice. Not since the time of his grandfather had the domain of the Galforts been set upon by orcs. When last the marauders had come, it had taken over 2 generations to repair the damage. Now the aged Marquis de Galfort sat in his throne room, deep in troubled thoughts. He had ordered messengers to be sent at once to the neighboring counts, barons, and dukes, letting them know of this peril that had come upon his domain and threatened them all. There was no question that all were at risk, for orcs respect no boundaries, and it would not matter to them if the village they plundered belonged to the Galfort or some other. No, his neighbors would react as decent Bretonian nobles, and would send a company of knights and such armsmen as they could muster to augment the Galfort's own forces and hunt the orcs down. But it would take time, much time, for the aid to arrive, and the orcs would be free to loot and despoil until then. Unless the Marquis were to act on his own, without the support of his neighbors. The Marquis looked up from his chair and stared down into the eager face of his young son, Etienne, and wondered if he had ever borne such inexperience and naivete in his own youth. The boy had pleaded with him all morning, ever since the tale of orcs and slaughter had been related, to release to him the household knights, to let him write down these monsters and make them learn the folly of trespassing upon the lands protected by the de Galfort's name. The Marquis's observation that the peasant had no idea how many orcs were in the raiding party, that an entire army of the green-skinned monsters might have been vomited from the mountains, had done nothing to dim the boy's enthusiasm. He was young, not yet learned in the ways of war. The only blood he had ever shed was that of wolves, wildcats, and bandits. He reckoned this to be a similar task, perhaps a bit nobler, putting more faith in the favors of the lady and good Bretonian steel, that he did in the strength of monsters he knew only from legend and traveler's tales. Truth to tell, it had been a long time since any in the de Galfort's domain had laid eyes upon an orc. Even the Marquis himself had only seen stuffed specimens in the castle of the Duc de Villefer, never a living, breathing greenskin. And the Marquis was an old enough hunter and soldier to know that it is folly to pursue a foe, beast or man, whom you know nothing of. A servant entered, bowing low before the 2 noblemen, and hastened forward to the seated Marquis. The Marquis raised a thin hand, the fur-trimmed cuff of his voluminous robe falling away, and gestured for the servant to speak.
"By your leave, my lord," the servant said, his voice low, his eyes downcast. "I felt that you would like to be informed that the outlander is making ready to depart."
The Marquis rose from his chair, an excited light blazing in his eyes. His wrinkled skin cracked into a smile.
"Of course," he said. "Why did I not think of it before?"
He fixed his gaze on the servant.
"Hasten to the gate and inform Sir Donoval that the outlander is not to be allowed to leave."
A sly look entered the Marquis's eyes.
"Tell him to bring the bounty hunter to me."
The Marquis stroked the scraggly mustache that spread from the thick gray hairs of his nostrils to the corners of his chin. It was a nervous habit, a peculiarity of temperament that afflicted him whenever he was discomfited. Normally, it only struck him at balls and masquerades and other such public functions of pomp and pageantry. But there was something decidedly unsettling about the man who stood before him, his face unreadable behind the steel mask of the black helm he had not doffed upon entering the presence of the Marquis, as custom demanded. Nor had he bowed, as had the armored bulk of Sir Donoval, who was now crouched upon one knee. But the Marquis had expected such disregard for his station from the man. Had he not behaved so the previous day? Had he not strode to the Marquis's throne with such arrogance that he might have been the emperor himself? Had he shown any consideration for the delicate sensibilities of the women of the court,
when he had presented the Marquis with the grisly object that had brought him to the de Galfour's domain. No, it was not the contempt for nobility which the bounty hunter showed that unsettled the Marquis. There was an aura about the man, something which the aged Marquis, with one foot in Moore's domain already, could see with his old, tired eyes. It was as if an air of dread hung about the man like a shroud, a miasma of blood and death. The Marquis had not shied from the sword in his younger days, and he had known knights who had been steeped in blood as any Sartosan corsair or Norse reaver. But there had been reasons for the lives they took, a cause that ennobled their deeds, a chivalry that governed their actions. There was no such honor about the bounty hunter. Though he walked with death, like a comrade in arms, he did not respect it. Death was nothing more than a commodity to him, a ware to be traded at the market. "I understood our business to be at an end," the bounty hunter rasped icily. Beside him, Sir Donoval tensed, one hand drooping to the pommel of his sword. The bounty hunter let his own gloved hand caress the butt of his pistol, nestled against his belly.
"There is another service I would ask of you," the Marquis said, choosing to ignore the bounty hunter's words. "I shall pay you twice what you collected for Lorca the Stallion and his brigands."
Brunner stared at the seated noble. Silence lingered on for so long that it seemed to become an almost tangible thing. At last he nodded his head, the gloved hand adopting a slightly more casual position on the butt of his pistol.
"You have my interest," Brunner said at last. "Who do you want me to kill?"
"Not who, but what," the Marquis corrected. The bounty hunter's eyes narrowed behind his visor, though from suspicion or interest, the noble could not be sure.
"Yesterday, a band of orcs invaded my land, torched one of my villages, and murdered my peasants. I want you to track them down."
"I have fought orcs before," Brunner replied. "Their raiding parties come in many sizes. A horde numbers thousands, and the warband consists of a single bull. I have no desire to trade swords with either."
The bounty hunter touched a finger to the brim of his helm, turning on his heel to leave.
"I do not ask you to kill them yourself," the Marquis hastened to say, hoping to keep the killer from leaving.
He wondered whether his men would be able to detain him. Fortunately, the bounty hunter stopped and faced him once again.
"I ask only that you lead my son and the company of my knights to these brutes."
"And if they number more than your men can handle?" Brunner asked pointedly.
The kneeling Sir Donoval bit down the protest, welling up in his massive chest.
"I will pay you only to track these monsters, not to fight them. If they are more than the men I send with you and my son can handle, to await the reinforcements I have requested from the neighboring domains."
"And who shall make the decision as to how many orcs are too many?" Brunner asked, his sharp tone suggesting that he already knew the answer before it was given.
"My son shall be in command, Brunner,"
the Marquis replied, refusing to be intimidated in his own castle.
"You shall defer to him in all matters of command."
Brunner stood still for a moment, and the Marquis de Galfort wondered if he would refuse the task. But at last, the bounty hunter nodded his armored head.
"Very well, I agree to the terms. But it will be 3 times what you paid me for Lorca. More, if I have to use the sword."
The bounty hunter fixed the Marquis with a penetrating gaze.
"With orcs, one is never sure who is the hunted and who is the hunter."
The company of horsemen rode from the yawning maw of the castle gate, the ponderous weight of armored knight and barded warhorse causing the timbers of the drawbridge to shudder and creak. 50 of the Marquis de Galfort's knights and their lightly armored squires had been delegated to accompany Etienne de Galfort and the foreign bounty hunter. the young de Galfort was certain that it was too many noble men to dispatch upon so rude a quest, positive that a dozen knights would be more than enough for any brutish adversary. Brunner had refrained from commenting on the boy's enthusiasm.
"The thin column of smoke, there on the horizon."
Sir Donoval pointed a steel-cloved finger towards the south. Brunner followed the knight's gesture.
"That was the hamlet of Villiers."
The bounty hunter nodded.
"What is the closest habitation to Villiers?"
the icy voice asked.
"Of what concern is that?"
interrupted Etienne de Galfort. The visor of his helm had been lifted, exposing his smooth-featured, handsome face, and an eager gleam in his eyes. He did not flinch as the bounty hunter turned in his saddle and fixed him with a cold stare.
"The orcs will head for the next closest village," Brunner explained. "With our horses, we should be able to engage them before they reach their destination."
"Such is your view of the situation," objected Etienne. "But what if the orcs do not proceed as you say? We shall have wasted our time and worn out our steeds in pursuit of phantoms."
"At least we would be able to warn the peasants," Sir Donoval said. "They should be able to retreat back to the safety of your father's castle."
"And shall we ride across the whole domain and warn every little hovel to pack its belongings and fly to the castle?"
Etienne de Galfort responded, shaking his head.
"We would be weeks rounding up every miner, woodsman, and shepherd."
The young nobleman clenched his mailed fist.
"No, we serve them best by running those monsters to ground before they can cause further damage."
Brunner leaned forward, the leather of his saddle creaking, the blue eyes behind the visor glaring at Etienne.
"And how do you propose to accomplish this feat?"
"We shall ride to the hamlet of Villiers," replied Etienne. "There you shall do what my father is paying you to do. You shall pick up the trail of the orcs and follow their tracks back to their lair."
The nobleman snorted with contempt.
"Then you will be free to pull back while we attend to the monsters."
Brunner spat into the dust of the road.
"These are orcs on the march," he explained. "They have no lair. They sleep only when their fatigue overpowers them, and lie where they fall. They can march for days without rest, and their wind will carry them longer than even the best of your horses. If you try to wear them down, they will wear you down, and fall upon you when you are tired, and most in need of rest. No, it is better to anticipate them, to lie in wait for them."
"I am in command here," Etienne snapped. "We ride for Villiers, and you will find the trail these orcs have taken. That is an order. This is a hunt, bounty killer, not some Tylean pirate prince's game of skulk and dagger. I think you will find these monsters much less capable of matching Bretonian vigor than you imagine."
So saying, Etienne reined his steed about and set it galloping down the southward spur of the track. The other knights and their squires followed. With a last surly look at the castle and the aged marquis who had impressed him into accepting the task, Brunner turned Fiend his own bay about and rode after the line of Bretonians. Old Marcel whistled a tune as he made his way down the rocky terrain, back toward the little mining camp. The heavy wicker basket of salt rocks was lashed to his back, but it was a weight the miner had borne many times, and he no longer even felt the burden, except when it was no longer there. The Bretonian thought about the meal his wife was preparing for him, the small fowl his young son had claimed with his bow the day before would make good eating, after boiling over a small flame for the day. The miner suddenly pitched to the ground, misjudging his step. Marcel crashed onto his belly, skinning his knee on the loose stones, the rocks of salt spilling from his pack. He gave voice to a curse as he crawled toward the nearest of the crystals, but a deep, rumbling sound froze him in place. He turned his face to see what could utter such a harsh, unpleasant sound. Beady red eyes gleamed back at the man from a scarred visage of fangs and leathery green skin. The orc laughed again. It had not been a misstep that had tripped the old Bretonian, but a shove from the orc's massive paw. Marcel began to crawl away from the hulking monster, noting with alarm the massive axe gripped in its other paw. The monster watched the man retreat. Marcel could see amusement fade from the greenskin's eyes, and a cold look of death crept in. The orc uttered a low snarl and raised the huge axe, taking a step towards the old miner.